November 2, any heavy, contact departure 119.2, good night.
119.2, 290 heavy.
Welcome to the Aeropedia podcast. I'm Ashwin.
And I'm Peter.
Not sure if you're going to like this episode or love this episode, but I can definitely guarantee you will learn something from this episode. So, Peter, what's our topic for today?
Thanks, Ashwin. Today's topic is simulator flight training. So we have the pleasure of having Monica Dwyer with us. Monica is the center leader at CAE's Minneapolis flight training facility. Monica's background includes being an air transport pilot and has extensive experience in flight training at multiple air carriers in the United States. Monica is also a graduate of the University of Illinois. So, Ashwin, are you ready if our engine fails on this simulated takeoff?
You know, I think even though it's simulated, it's going to feel very real. But let's definitely dive in and learn some more.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Monica. It's great to have you. We like to kick things off just giving our listeners an introduction about you and your background. So maybe you can just explain how you got into aviation and a little bit about your background.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to be a guest. It's great to be here. So my background in aviation specifically started when I was at University of Illinois. I went there as a geography major, but transitioned into the pilot program. So did not intend to start out as a pilot, but that was where I ended up. So did that, got a job as a flight instructor. That's how many people build flight hours. Then got a job as a pilot for Chautauqua Airlines, which turned into Republic Airways out of Indianapolis. And I was there for about 20 years, did a bunch of different roles there, was a pilot, instructor, was in training leadership there for the pilot group. And then when we moved to Minnesota, I got a job at a different airline, not in training, and eventually found my way to a training provider called CAE, where I was a simulator instructor. And now I'm the center leader for CAE here in Minneapolis.
So geography major turned pilot. So you wanted to see the geography from the air is what
I guess. Mean. Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
Pretty cool. So Monica, can you just explain for our listeners, what does CAE do and what are the different product suites that they're involved in?
Okay. Yeah. So CAE is a Canadian company. We are global leader in flight training, and we offer a number of different things in flight training. And they range from full type rating courses, which is when we get pilots who already have pilot credentials and are coming to learn a specific aircraft platform. But the company really started as a simulator manufacturer. And so we have simulators that we sell to customers at airlines and at different, so we have a military branch. And then where I am is a training center where we host our own simulators here. And then we have customers who come in and use our simulators and we support them both with instructors. And then they also use our devices with their own instructors.
Very cool. For some of our non-aviation listeners, right? Can you define what exactly a flight simulator is and what it does?
Yeah. So a flight simulator is a device. There are different levels of simulation. So a low-level simulator device would be something that mimics flight, but maybe doesn't have the actual controls in front of it. So like a touchscreen layout of a flight deck where pilots can use or learn procedures through to full flight simulators, which are what people think of the large device. I wish I had my model here on my desk, but it's a, looks like something kind of out of Star Wars or something. It's a big box that sits on motion legs, and the movement of the device simulates flight. And inside is, when you step into it, it looks exactly like a particular aircraft's flight deck. So, for example, we have a 737 simulator here. You walk into it and The visuals that are depicted behind it look just like an airport. You can make it snow or rain or the sun shining or daylight or nighttime or however you want to simulate that portion of it. It is laid out identical to an aircraft, and it mimics it so precisely that pilots earn all of their credentials to fly that aircraft in just the device. Kind of an interesting fact about flight simulation is, and this is my personal situation as well, the first time I flew one of the aircraft that I trained in, the simulator, the simulation was such a high level device that the first time I stepped foot on that aircraft as a pilot was with paying airline passengers. Wow. I mean, obviously I was with a well-qualified captain who knew exactly what he was doing. And so, but in any case, I think that's a real testament to how precisely these devices mimic actual flying.
That's amazing. Yeah. And even has to the point of like the sounds and of the aircraft and that are simulated and mimicked. Is that true?
Yep. Yeah, no, that's a really good question. These are highly tuned devices where they have a quarterly program where we have to go through a rigorous sound testing, for example, where microphones are placed throughout the device and it's tested to ensure that it mimics the sounds. So, and of course we have a volume button at the instructor station so we can turn it down so we don't have to be yelling over the wind noise, but it's amazing. I mean, you go faster in the thing and it gets louder and it's really an incredible machine.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when are these full flight simulators used in a pilot training program?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So my background is airline, so I can speak mostly to that, but they're used for a number of different applications. So for the large majority, people who are already pilots, have pilot credentials, they come in and learn a specific aircraft. So that's typically when the simulators are used. It's when an employer or a private person who has an aircraft for which you need to be trained in a simulator, that's who our customers are. And then of course, here at my center, it's airline pilots. So at my center, you have to be employed by one of our airline customers to be training in one of our devices.
And is the benefit of that largely economical, that it's less expensive to have someone train in a simulator than to actually get the real airplane? Or are there other reasons why simulators?
Yeah, so that is exactly one of them, is it's more economical to train in a device that's bolted to the ground. You're not subject to the weather and things like that. You're not burning fuel. But it's also probably the bigger reason is because you can practice all kinds of emergencies and problems that would otherwise come up that you could not possibly practice safely in an actual aircraft. So for example, one of the highest demand skills that a pilot needs to have would be on a high-speed takeoff roll if your engine were to fail. Now that's not something that, I mean, you certainly do practice that in training, but you're not going to pull an engine as you're taking off in an actual aircraft. I mean, there are people who do, but not super smart or safe to do that. So, but in a simulator, I can put a pilot up there and send him off on his way and let him fail, if you will, where in an actual aircraft, you could never let them crash or go off the runway or something like that. So, and if, let's say things, you're in an actual airplane and you wanted to simulate that, the student goes, they don't do it super well, the instructor has to take over. You have to fly all the way around the pattern, come down, land, turn around, and then try it again. And I mean, in a 737, it's just, there's just things that you can do in a simulator that you would never attempt in an actual airplane.
Yeah, very true. And it would be very unsafe to do so. So just looking at the entire airline pilot training journey, how much of that would you say happens in the simulator versus, in a real aircraft?
So, that's a really interesting question. So typically right now, industry standard would be for an airline pilot, by the time the pilot is employed by an airline, they already have likely over 1,000 hours of experience, and usually even more, much more than that. So they're coming in, they've already flown quite a bit. They've probably flown large complex aircraft. So they come in, they get several weeks of ground training on a specific airline and aircraft procedures. And then they go into a low level simulation device, a procedure trainer of some kind typically, that's for a couple days. And then they'll go into a simulator for training all different kinds of emergency maneuvers. And then usually the tail end of it is a transition to line flying where you're not, things aren't catching fire and you're not practicing engine fail. It's just a routine flight where you're actually doing what 99% of your job is as a pilot once you're out there. And then they go out to fly the actual aircraft. So as far as how much of it is in the simulator, it's about a third ground school, a third procedure training, and a third full flight simulator.
That's really interesting. You mentioned a little bit around airline differences. We talked a few weeks ago at one of our podcasts with a safety management system expert. And in there, you know, a lot of consistency and sharing of best practices between airlines was really emphasized. So in the training, how much differences are there from one airline to another for a particular airplane type?
Gosh, yeah, that's a good question. I would say generally the procedures start with a manufacturer's recommendation. So, you know, Airbus 320, you know, the aircraft manufacturer comes up with a set procedure. And so an airline, when they first purchase that, they start with that, but then they start, it starts to evolve into that airline's specific procedures and call outs and maybe matching other aircraft platforms, you know, where you want to have as much consistency across your different fleet types so that the pilots who are transitioning from one to the other, they're learning that airplane, but they're not having to relearn, oh, at, you know, at 1,000 feet, I was calling this in this airplane, but in this airplane, I'm going to be, it's going to be a different procedure. So that there's a, so it kind of depends on the airline, but they're all sort of from the same base program from the manufacturer typically. So, you know, and there's a little bit of variation airline to airline, but for the vast majority of it, it's very similar.
So what are the different disciplines that are involved in making flight simulation possible?
So yeah, flight simulation is a really multidisciplinary thing. Like I was saying, these are highly tuned machines that have to be very thoughtfully engineered to replicate flight. So there's a just a army of computer engineers who are behind the scenes matching up the tilting of the box to what you're seeing on the displays and things like that. So there's a lot of engineering discipline that goes into the design. There's technical experts who both build and maintain them. So depending on where the simulator is manufactured, there's a lot of precision that goes into designing and building it. And then also the maintenance, the technicians. So any simulator that you have has a schedule of routine maintenance if something goes wrong. So those people are usually the ones who are very technically savvy. I've got here in Minnesota, in my Minneapolis center, I've got some technicians who grew up on farms, and they are just, they can fix anything. It's just amazing. So whether it's a widget or a computer or anything in between, I mean, they're experts at fixing things. So there's kind of the hands-on technical fixing. And then of course the pilots, the instructors, and the scheduling that goes into it. That's also an incredibly complicated thing, because depending on who the customers are who are coming in to use a simulator, we want to maximize the use of the simulator, both for the customer, but also for the business. So scheduling can be very complicated, and sales, you know, making sure that anyone that would like to use our devices knows that we have the product line that we've got. So there's just a lot of different hands in the pot here.
You also mentioned that there's a significant portion, obviously, of the airline pilots' flight training journey that happens in the simulator, and some of it happens, thereby in flight. Why isn't all of the training done on the simulator itself?
Well, in fact, depending on what level of simulator you're using, it may be that the actual training portion of it is done entirely in the simulator. Now, yeah, I was saying how the first time I went on board my first jet that I was qualified in, I was with a plane full of passengers, paying passengers, with an experienced captain. So that is technically part of the training as well, because you can't simulate the air traffic environment or the weather environment or passengers who are, needing a special accommodation or, things like that. So there's all kinds of additional things that you can't simulate that you really need to learn on the job. So there's a little bit of additional training, but the early stages of becoming a pilot, it doesn't make economic sense to learn in a simulator. Again, in part because you learn, you kind of learn sometimes, especially early on, from some bad decisions that you can make in a small plane that you would never make in a large one. So, and there just isn't the precision of simulation in the training aircraft. So like a Cessna 152, that would be the size of a Corolla, you're just a little four seat thing that you get in and has essentially the strength of a car engine and some Hershey bar wings on there that, you can just, it's a very simple device that you can go out and learn in. So that would not make economic sense to be done in a simulator. So
I know that CAE makes different types of simulators for different aircraft, right? Can you learn pretty much to fly any aircraft by just being in the simulator itself?
So the simulators are very specifically configured for a particular aircraft type. And then there's different variants of the different types. So depending on what the regulatory guidance is, you couldn't go into a 737 simulator to learn how to fly a Airbus, for example. So it's pretty aircraft specific. There are some, like a Boeing 757 and 767 is a common type rating. So you can learn to fly one, and it's just a differences training to fly the other. So there's a few of them out there like that, but you can, and only certain aircrafts, which generally transport category aircraft or the larger ones that even have a flight simulator available for them. So just like I was saying, a Cessna 152, there's not a full flight simulator that I'm aware of out there, but there's several manufacturers of a Boeing 777, for example. So you can learn some aircrafts, but yeah, it's generally the larger ones where it makes economic sense to have a flight simulator for them.
Ashwin, don't tell them about your secret simulator in your basement. Cessna 152. Monica, you mentioned you mentioned differences training. People may not be familiar with what that is. Is that just in a classroom or reading a book, or what is differences training?
Yeah, I'm oversimplifying a lot of these answers. Hopefully, so they make sense. So, differences training is generally the regulatory bodies will prescribe what you need to, if you're qualified in one thing and there's something pretty similar, then you would do a differences course. Sometimes the differences course is literally, you can train by memo. Others are certain parts of an aircraft. Trying to think of an example. So an Embraer 170 versus an Embraer 190, for example. An Embraer 170 and 190 is a common type rating. However, to learn to fly an Embraer 190, the 190 has an overwing exit. So you have to learn how to egress out of a window overwing exit as part of your differences training. And you can't do that by memo. So that part of it, you actually have to physically remove a overwing exit as part of your training. So, and then some of the other differences, like a CRJ 900 to a 200, that is also a common type rating, but those two variants are significantly different. So you have to actually go into a simulator to do a differences, which is an abbreviated pilot training course. So the full type rating would be much longer, and then other variants that are more similar, you would do a differences course that would be prescribed by the level of difference between the two.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'm removing the Embraer 170-190 spotting difference from your test. You won't get that in trivia this week.
Oh, is that right? I hope you asked me how many windows are in an Embraer 145 versus a 135. I can answer that one. So.
Oh, I'll have to add that to our list. Trivia questions.
So I'm just curious about, you said you're based in Minneapolis, right? So, you know, how does CAE plan where they set up centers and what specific types of simulators they have in each center?
Gosh, I mean, that's thankfully outside of my realm of influence. But no, I mean, I would say just in general, anyone who operates simulators, they want to place them where the customers are, so, and where the need is. So if there's a customer who flies Airbuses and they're out of Chicago and there's a demand for it there, it would make the business case and things like that. So the thing that's kind of interesting about flight simulation is we generally cater to people who are mobile. So it is important to have it be co-located with headquarters for a company or something like that. But there's also, they're much more mobile than say, you know, some other industry where the business is not moving people. So airlines can travel pretty good distances for their pilot training needs. So I mean, of course it makes most sense to have it at home, but traveling for simulator training is not uncommon at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And as we all know, Minneapolis is a hub for one of the largest airlines in the world, and it's extremely centrally located in the continent as well. So, you know, it's very accessible, right? So it makes perfect sense. So what do you think is the future of the flight simulation industry in general and specifically the full flight simulators?
Yeah. I mean, I'm my crystal ball tells me that the full flight simulators will be around for a very long time. I mean, of course, there's movement towards single pilot aircraft, and which would part of the interest in that is it halves the number of pilots that are needed, which would have the amount of training needed. But those people would still need to be trained. Okay, so I think that's sort of an interesting discussion. And just with every industry, the ability to remote into things. I mean, even air traffic control, they're doing. There are airports in Finland, for example, where not a lot of operations out of those airports, but it's really important to have air traffic control. And so they have cameras placed everywhere where the air traffic controller is nowhere even physically near that airport, and they're controlling it remotely. So applying that to flight training, just the interest in making things accessible remotely, reducing the number of contact days. I mean, of course, I can't imagine pilot training ever happening without the pilot touching the device and doing it for him or herself. But there's opportunities to incorporate things like virtual reality that is just so much less labor intensive to maintain than a full flight simulator. But still, these are all progression steps probably ending with a full flight simulator. That's just sort of my thought about it, that there's many opportunities to reduce the amount of time where the person's sitting in a classroom or potentially just preparing them better for that final stage of full flight simulation and making it more efficient and more precise and safer and everything like that. So I think there's some opportunities that are pretty interesting and exciting with that.
Awesome. Yeah, it's such a fascinating world. And, you know, it's very intriguing to think about the future ahead, right? Especially when you start looking at single pilot operations and remotely piloted planes and things like that, right? Yeah, very, very...
Let's get through remotely driven cars first and then...
Exactly. Yeah, lots of hot button political issues there as well, right? Yeah. But yeah, we'll kind of transition away from this. Marika, I think we can talk for hours about this. It's so cool. But let's try to get to know you a bit better. So the next section is a rapid fire round where we ask you slightly more personalized questions and try to understand, you know, your skill set and how you developed it and some of your favorite things about the industry. So the first question in that category is, name one hard skill and one soft skill that you think is essential to succeed in your role.
Yeah, so for my role specifically, and actually this is kind of has one foot in either camp, but prioritization is both a hard and a soft skill that I call on every day, because just airlines and aviation in general is rapidly changing, evolving. I mean, I drive in, I don't know exactly what I'm going to be doing that day. I mean, you know, it's just there's just a lot of things that come my way. So prioritizing is a really important skill. I use office skills, you know, sort of the general stuff. And I do draw very frequently on my pilot background and my experience in pilot training and just the industry in general. So as far as a soft skill, one of the things that I use sort of just in life in general is don't let perfect get in the way of good, where you can work on something and just put hours and hours to make it just the smallest percent better. And really, if you want to be efficient and productive, sometimes you need to understand when it's good. Now, adding aviation into it, it's kind of a different thing where, and there's safety and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you can't cut corners. I'm not suggesting cutting corners is the right way, but just sort of understanding when you've done enough is the right soft skill. So.
Yeah, that's very insightful. What's your favorite aviation memory?
So one of my most vivid aviation memories is when I grew up in Chicago, and Chicago has a world-class air and water show every summer. And they do some boat stuff in the lake, and then they have the flyovers. And we had family friends who lived along the lakeshore in a high-rise building that had a large rooftop deck, I would call it. And so only residents were allowed, and they could bring a certain number of guests. And so they would invite my family there, and we would go, and we go to the rooftop. And my memory as a kid, this probably not the case at all, was seeing these bomber size aircraft flying low over the lake. So I was looking down on top of the aircraft. So, you know, and then they had either the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds or something like that. And again, my kid memory is that they were flying between the buildings. I mean, that was what it felt like. So, you know, the skyline of Chicago and the excitement of the air and water show and it being summertime and stuff like that. So that's just a really fun memory.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. I don't think too many people can say that they've looked down while an aircraft was flying and they've been, you know, in a building. Wow. That's
yeah. Well, I mean, that might be my my kid memory of it. But anyway, it's still my fondest memory. So.
Yeah. Cool. Next question is, what part of aviation do you think is least understood or misunderstood by the general public? And what can they do to learn more about that?
Yeah. So this one is, for me, I'm not a pilot anymore by choice, because being a pilot is a really hard job. And I think that that's a really misunderstood thing about aviation. It seems sort of this glamorous job where you're kind of calling the shots and, you know, but it's a real grind. And you spend a lot of time away from your family. And yes, pilots get a lot of time off, but it's rarely the days that you want to be home. You know, it's the middle of the week in February. You know, it's not a birthday or an anniversary or a holiday or something like that. So yeah, it makes for a really difficult, it's just a really hard job. So I think that that's not really well understood as far as how to learn about it. Yeah, I mean, I think just kind of listening to what pilots are saying and, you know, and stuff is really about the job and the work environment and things like that. I mean, it's the flip side of that though is, pilots who are doing it and continue to do it for the living cannot imagine doing anything else. They just love it. They can, yeah, they can. They think I'm crazy because I have pilot credentials and I sit in an office and I love my job. So, but they just love doing, being a pilot.
Yeah. And then one of the last questions is, tell us about your favorite flight experience, your favorite flight leg specifically. And, you know, what was the origin, the destination, what airline were you flying? What cabin was it, et cetera?
So it was, Modica Dwyer Airlines was what it was. It's a way of saying that, I was in a small aircraft. We were skiing in Breckenridge. And so we drove to the Vail Airport and, I hired a instructor to fly along with us cause I didn't have a lot of mountain flying experience, but it was, three of us who hopped in a little four seater. So, two of my family members and instructor, we flew from Vail, Colorado to Aspen and back again. It was just something I've never have done before, have not done since. Just the flying in the mountains, and I mean, it was a tiny little thing. It was totally underpowered. You know, we really struggled to get up over the mountains and landed. Actually, one of the funny things was, it was actually a friend who came with us, and she didn't know that we were going to a different airport. She thought we were just going to get up and fly around and land again. And so when we arrived at Aspen, it's this spectacular private terminal where we got out. And I mean, everyone else is flying these fancy jets and we pop out of our little four seat Cessna or whatever it was. And my friend, we walk inside and she was like, this isn't the same place we started, is it? You know, anyway, it was really funny. So it was just a really quick flight. I mean, by car, it's much further. But anyway, so that's my most memorable sort of favorite flight leg experience.
Awesome. And I have one final bonus question. You grew up in Chicago and you're currently living in Minneapolis. Both of those are hubs for two different airlines. What is your favorite airline?
Oh, gosh. Today, my favorite airline to travel on really is Delta. So I grew up loving United Airlines. I was a flight officer intern for them, had a life-changing magical experience working there. But I think Delta in part because I can go anywhere nonstop. The cabin service and just the expectation that the TV in front of me is going to be working and that there's going to be a TV. And that the Wi-Fi is there and it's free, got my club access, and you know, so it's the hometown airline. So there's reasons why it's a favorite.
Awesome. Yeah, I kind of expected that, but just wanted to check.
Well, actually, I should give a shout out to SAS because I had a opportunity to do. Swedish delivery of a Volvo. This is now many years ago, but just the level of service of the foreign carriers is unmatched. It's there's some really great. I mean, I got coffee offered to me in economy probably 1,000 times on the flight between Chicago and Stockholm. So anyway, just you know, it's a little bit of a different experience than the U.S. owned carriers. But
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot. We're going to transition to our next round. Peter, what is that going to be?
Oh, it's trivia round.
Oh,
trivia
yeah.
Round. Welcome, Modica, to your round.
Okay.
So this is the opportunity, a Aeropedia exclusive, where each guest gets to try their hand at a few questions I've put together.
Place your bets, everyone.
Naming our trivia champion by the end of the year. So are you ready?
I am ready. I see your screen share. Is this a video round?
There is. There's going to be going to be some, well, not video, but pictures. So for those of you listening in, if you want to take a look at our podcast on the Aeropedia or the Aeroscope Aviation YouTube channel, you can see all of the questions in picture form. But your first question is an airplane spotting question.
Oh.
So can you name the aircraft type with this unique winglet? And for those of you listening that can't see, it's a kind of a boxy looking top of the winglet with a smaller winglet at the front of the wing at the bottom. So kind of two all winglets.
Right. This is a total wild guess, but I'm gonna go with A330.
All right. It is a good guess, but it is incorrect. I'm sorry. It is the MD-11.
Oh, geez.
The MD-11.
Oh my God.
Has two different sized winglets, a larger one on top and this little one on the bottom. Oh my gosh. So
I told you no aircraft wreck questions.
I should have done the Embraer. I didn't do the Embraer. I'm sorry.
Oh man, I might have been all over that one.
Okay. Well, let's try your hand at the next one.
Okay.
Airport. This city center airport is unique for many reasons, but includes the fact that it's closed from 1 p.m. on Saturdays until 11 a.m. on Sundays, and its approach path is much steeper than the standard. So typically a runway approach path is a 3-degree approach. At this airport, in both directions, it's 5.5 degrees. And this is largely for noise abatement for the surrounding community. So
I'm going to guess London City Airport.
Ding, ding, ding. You've correctly.
Oh my God, that's right.
You're correct.
Oh my gosh.
It is London City Airport.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe I got that right.
All right. Next question. Regulatory agencies. What is the name of Europe's civil aviation regulatory authority?
EASA.
Wow, correct. It is.
Oh my gosh.
For extra credit, I should have asked you what the acronym is, but it's European Aviation Safety Agency, or EASA for short.
Man, I did not think I'd get any of these right. Okay.
Next question. IATA codes. So these are International Air Transport Association codes. And this code is KE, Kilo Echo. Can you name?
Kenya is the only one I can think. I have no idea.
It's a good guess for Kilo Echo. But it is, in fact, yeah. Korean Air.
Oh, Korean Air. Oh, I was thinking IATA, like... you know how United States airports have a K in front of them? Canada has a C, Charlie.
Yes.
Okay, K-E something.
That would be a good trick.
Yeah, I didn't know Korean Air anyway, so.
All right, Korean Air, Kilo Echo for IATA codes.
All right, good one.
All right, airlines. This national airline of Panama currently operates a fleet of 96 737s and is a member of the Star Alliance. Can you name the airline?
I think LATAM is South American. LATAM.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
All right. It is incorrect. I'm sorry. Copa. Copa Airlines is the airline in Panama. That's all 737s, member of the Star Alliance. So.
Okay.
Pretty good, Monica. That was your round.
All right, so, would I get two?
You got two.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
I thought I'd get one, so cool.
Excellent.
Nice, those good ones.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Monica. It was really informative, all the details around flight simulators and all the knowledge and expertise you have there. And I'm sure our listeners are going to be very interested to hear it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was great spending a couple minutes chatting with you all, and yeah, safe travels to everybody.
Thanks, Monica.
Thanks for joining us this week. Send us any feedback, trivia ideas, or future topics you may have to our email at aeropedia.podcast@gmail.com. See you on the next leg of our journey.